Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, October 17th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. One of our favoritest people returning to the show, Will Clark, produces and MCs the popular cult show, The Will Clark Show. What a clever name. Featuring porno bingo at the Ritz on Thursday nights in New York City from 7 to 9 p.m. Will Clark, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
How the heck are ya?
How the heck are you doing? It's been a few months. You were just about to start your tenure of The Will Clark Show in a new location.
Oh my God, that has been a long time. I think we've been there for 6 months. We started in mid-April, and it's a new space, it's a new day and a new time. So when a sitcom goes from one night to the other and it keeps getting bounced around a little bit, it's always a little bit of a challenge. You know, you have to do stunt things, have porn stars get naked, and drag queens do riffs from Designing Women. But you know, it's all part of the game, all parts of the fun that we have on Thursday nights at the Ritz.
I love you can get porn stars to be naked and get drag queens to do scenes from Designing Women. I just assumed those were their baseline. I didn't know those were stunts.
I know. Just work with me, Candy. Work with me. You have to pretend that this is stuff I have to coerce people to do. I have to bribe them with bacon and stuff for them to do.
I totally pulled back the curtain. I'm sorry. We can close that curtain right now.
All the hell.
Well, let's back up a step, because I, Ken Schneck, have never been to the Will Clark Show featuring Porno Bingo. What is it that I am missing?
Well, thank you, first of all, for saying my branding, because I really appreciate that. We were Porno Bingo for many, many years, and a couple of years ago I realized that we were, having some of our beneficiaries were having issues with promoting us because we were Porno Bingo. And I kind of changed the brand a little bit for the Will Clark Show featuring Porno Bingo. Then that way people could kind of pick and choose which part of that they wanted to use, and we would still be correct either way. But what we do on Thursday nights from 7 to 9 is that we play four rounds of bingo. We have a charity come in, and they sell the bingo cards, and they keep 100% of what they raise from the sale of those bingo cards. I usually have a couple guests, sometimes three, rarely four, but it's usually two. And it's porn stars or drag queens or celebrities, comics, actors. I've had producers, directors, it's kind of a little singers. We have up-and-coming people always performing, doing stuff, and so it's a variety show, talk show, fundraisers, very much a hybrid. I think the only thing that we don't do is we don't actually have a dance segment, although
okay.
We are doing the show now on a dance floor. So some people recently, about the last two or three shows, people have kind of gotten up during the break between rounds and just kind of started dancing, and that's due to our fabulous DJ, Mr. Chauncey Dandridge, who plays some real kick-ass tunes.
Nice.
And gets people just sort of like up and out of their seats, and while they're drinking and they're waiting for the next round, we have a little party. So it's always a little different, and there's always a different combo of guests. There's not always a porn star. There's not always a drag queen. There's not always a singer. It's a little bit of a variety, so you never quite know what you're going to be walking into. But I think that's part of the strength of the event.
Now, you act as the MC, and you are interviewing these folks on stage. How would you describe your interview style? Do you feel like you have your own style, or do you feel like you're getting up there and you're just thinking, how can I be like Ken Schneck?
It's always, how can I be like Ken Schneck? I use you as my rule of thumb, even for years before I even met you. I had a flash forward, like in Lost. And
I would like to stop the show right now and highlight that I will now be putting on my resume, Will Clark used me.
I think you should clarify how.
I'd rather not. I hear what you're saying, and I see you, and I validate you, but I'd rather leave that up to people to interpret in their own way. But in all seriousness, how would you describe your interview style?
My interview style is basically sort of drunken. It's a drunken interview style. It's like, how are you? What you doing? No, I don't. I'm kidding. You know, it's light and fluffy. We're not Oprah. This is not, you know, I would love to do sort of like a gay Oprah or, you know, a gay-er Ken show. But
if that's possible?
I don't think that is possible, quite frankly. I think you're at the end of the spectrum. Just like me, you know, on the Kinsey scale, 1 to 6, I'm like a 7 or 8.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm off the charts. But, no, and it's light. It's fun. You know, we're in a bar. It's in the evening. We're drinking. We're raising money. There's enough serious stuff around because most of the causes that we have are illness or violence or homeless LGBT teens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, there's already a seriousness sort of hanging over us. So in our interview, we try to, like, lighten it up and talk about sex and fun and where the star that week is appearing, or like the porn star, like talk about your scene and your scene partners, you know, and you know, it's all very fun, and it's not meant to offend, and it's meant to, you know, be interesting, but you know, not necessarily something that people need to hang on every word about.
Right.
I mean, I think I've had some wonderful conversations up on stage with people, where we do get kind of lost in kind of this really great conversation, and it is a lot more in depth, and I really love that, and I love to do more of that.
Nice.
It's just not the right place for that, because
right.
You know, people are drinking, like I said, and they're coming and going, and it's a little bit busy, you know, with people kind of coming and going and drinking. So trying to have a 60-minute conversation is just not really possible,
right.
Necessarily. Possible, just nobody will listen.
Well, and then there's that. And this week the focus is on meningitis, is it not?
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of work. I've done a lot of fundraising over the years for one of the two AIDS rides that has, you know, been in New York for many years, called Breaking the Cycle.
Yeah.
And one of the riders, usually we have like individual riders come in and raise money for their own ride, because they have to raise like $3,600 in advance just to like do the ride. So we've done a lot of that over the last few years, had individual riders come in, and that's always great. One of the riders actually that we haven't fundraised for, but who has been part of the organization and very well loved, passed away about a month ago.
Okay.
From meningitis. He was one of the four people who contracted it in the last couple months, and I think he's the only one who's died. I haven't gotten any updates as far as like the little cluster that was in New York. Now I know that that's sort of spread across the country, and you kind of validate, because when I put that up, I had a friend say, wow, it's four people, wow, that's really breaking news, dude, you know. And I was like, no, I think this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And you know, that has borne out over the past few weeks as it's cropped up in other states and involved many, many, many more people. So this writer named Kyle, who is delightful, and has helped out at a couple events that I produced, passed away, and a friend of his is collecting about $9,000, for final expenses and stuff. And so we're part of that. We're part of that. So this Thursday we'll be raising money for that. I usually don't do sort of individuals like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unlike what we do. We usually, 99.9% of the time, it's 501c3s,
right.
It's, you know, organizations. However, you know, this is the beautiful thing about having your own show, is I can basically kind of do what I want. And, I've done it a few times else. We've actually had some special causes like this over the years. We had another memorial service about 3 or 4 years ago, and another sort of the final costs of somebody I was in the Gay Men's Chorus with. We had a friend of mine who's a playwright who needed to get to Puerto Rico because a play that he had written was in a festival, and he had, like, no money to go, so we raised some money for him. And we also did a night to benefit a transsexual friend's boob surgery.
Nice.
And that was kind of an interesting night, because, you know, you're sort of saying, like, well, tonight we're raising money for boobs. You know, so it's a little... It was very weird, and it was odd, and, you know, whatever. But like I say, mostly we raise money for actual non-for-profits, and
right.
Once in a while we'll do individuals. Very rarely.
Okay. And did you raise enough money for the boobs?
I think that we raised a few hundred dollars, which is not, you know, enough to get the boobs, but we are part of the of the boob acquire process.
A part of those boobs are Will Clark property, I think.
I think one of the nipples.
It's like I opened the door and thought, well, maybe he won't walk through it. But he did. He walked right through it.
Well, who are you talking to?
Well, you mentioned a play. Last time we chatted, you were about to be one night only in a play. Do you recall?
Yes, I always recall my one night stand.
Tell everyone about your one night only appearance.
My one night only appearance was in a play called A Letter to the Bishop, and I played a rambunctious sex positive priest who was trying to persuade one of the other priests not to come out, and certainly not to come out against the church's stand against marriage equality. The reading went really, really well. The play is by Tony Adams.
Who was also on the show.
Yeah, and it's such a great piece of work, and I really loved being in the show. And we had a sold-out crowd, or it was nearly sold out. We were at St. Clemens, which is up here on West 46th Street in the city. And it was just a great evening and a wonderful experience to be a part of that, and also to do some acting again, which I haven't really done since the last time I had a first date. So, no, that's not right. Well, you know what I mean.
I'm not touching that one. Keep going. And I don't often say that to you. That's not a phrase I'm comfortable saying.
Yeah, you actually are usually asking me to touch that.
Will Clark used me. You heard it here first, folks.
That's right. It's on your resume.
It is. It's right there. It's under special skills.
I had a really, really busy June. In fact, I think June of 2012 was one of the busiest I've had in years. I emceed Folsom East
yes.
in the city. We did the show. I also managed three weddings, and one was at a comic book shop.
Oh, we're going to talk about comic books in a second, but you keep going.
And, you know, and bingo, and, I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple other, like, major things that I was doing. The whole month is a blur to me. But it was great. I love being busy. I love having lots of stuff. And it was all different stuff, so, like, none of it was the same.
How would you describe your ensemble for Folsom East?
My ensemble, well, there wasn't much to it, actually. I'd like to say that there was something, but there was not much to it.
Okay.
Well, I started out in like this rubber apron thing that I borrowed from one of the organizers. Not like a cooking apron while you're making cookies, but like a blacksmith's sort of.
Gotcha.
Sort
of okay.
Thing, I just didn't know what it is. But the problem with the blacksmith thing is that it does cover up everything, and I didn't wear underwear with it, so it had to be really tight. It had to be tight, tight, tight on me. So, and then of course it's so tight that you're like, oh, I'm a little flat down there. So, it was a whole thing. But it eventually got down to a harness and like a little G-string and tall boots. It's all for a good cause.
And that's the point, is that it's all for a good cause. We have different lives, Will Clark. I don't know if you know that.
I got that vibe.
Just saying. I'm just putting that out there. Now, I must say, Will Clark, as the world knows, witty, extraordinarily attractive. Who knew Will Clark also, and this your stock just shot up in my book, and just let that euphemism go, comic book enthusiast.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us, where is that appreciation rooted?
Well, it's one of my many secret shames. I am a little bit of a comic book nut. I have not read them regularly for a few years. I kind of keep an eye on them. I in the 70s, I started reading Casper and Wendy, and I just loved that. And my sister, in an attempt to, I think, butch me up or something, bought me a copy of Justice League, Flash, and Action Comics I don't think that they do this anymore, but this is in the 70s. We were at the Clock Tower in Rockford, Illinois.
Okay.
And we were having dinner. We were traveled down by our Winnebago. This is how Midwestern I am.
Nice.
And that's three comics in a bag for a dollar. And I was hooked. And they were really great stories. And I started getting DC Comics from that time. And I read for, I would say, that was 76, so I read for about 11 or 12 years pretty regularly, and I have tons of boxes in a storage unit down the street. Woohoo! That's That's certainly an economical thing to keep hold of.
I actually think it is, but keep going.
Well, you know. And so for most of the last sort of 25 years, I've kind of dipped in and out. I've met a lot of comics professionals. Some of them are friends. Some of them are just, you know, acquaintances. I went to Comic-Con last year here in New York, covered it for Edge Online. And I love the medium. I love the genre. I think that it's an incredible thing. I get tired of all the reboots and, you know, retcons and crossovers and all that kind of thing. I just kind of want a good story. And of course, as you know, one of the best series of all time is the whole Sandman thing. The Sandman stories, which, you know, are fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and I was just reminded of that because I was actually watching The Simpsons last night. I have DVR, you know, I've DVR'd a bunch of recent repeats, and the Neil Gaiman episode was on it where he, the group, it's sort of a heist movie takeoff, and, you know, they're writing a children's book, and it's, you know, and I was reminded how wonderful, wonderful, wonderful that series of Sandman books was. And I have all the original issues from 1 to 80-something, I think is what it is.
Nice.
Plus most of the bound books. And, you know, I have a nice little collection. It's nothing, you know, that will win any awards. But I love them all, and they're really great stories, and I love the characters. So,
were you able to make it to Comic-Con this weekend?
I was not. I was not able to go this year. I wanted to go, but it's just the timing for me and some other stuff just wasn't quite right. And I would have been rushing and scrambling. And I just, you know, last year I had a great time. I think Comic-Con, though, is like the Black Party.
Mm-hmm.
And the Black Party is like Star Trek movies where only every other one is good.
I've never been. I feel like I would be crazy overwhelmed. And so I've never been to a Comic-Con yet, but I would go to New York City Comic-Con. I feel like that would be a lot easier to handle than the San Diego one.
Yeah, I think you need about $1,000 if you're going to really go to Comic-Con, because you need to like have that disposable income, that slush fund,
right,
so that you can actually buy stuff, because there's a lot of stuff to buy. There's back issues, there's figurines, there's a book or two and whatever. And I think you really want to do it. If you're going to do it, you might as well do it right. Last year, in my head, I spent about $10,000. I didn't actually spend $10,000.
Okay.
I think the only thing I bought last year was like the Kevin Keller episode, Kevin Keller issues of Archie.
Yeah.
You know, that new thing, which I read and were wonderful, and I really haven't followed up on all of that. But I did interview Dan, the author of those, and it's marvelous guy and a great series and just a great thing to be introducing to Archie Comics. Is incredible and
huge.
A gay character. Amazing.
They need a gay ghost there in Casper.
Yes, the Harvey people need a gay ghost of some sort.
I'm just saying.
It may be a little redundant.
It could be. It could be. So what is it? What do we think the connection between... I feel like we've been focusing on comics for the past couple of weeks on the show. What do you think is that definitive connection between gay men and these superheroes?
I have no idea. I mean, superficially, obviously, people say, oh, it's the tight spandex and the muscle bodies. But I don't think that it's that superficial. I really don't. For me, I like the characters and I like the continuity and I like the camaraderie that exists in those stories, especially the old style DC, mm-hmm, in the 70s and 80s and, you know, 60s, where these were all sort of people who were friends with each other and professionally compatible. And, you know, since the 80s and 90s, it's been kind of like in fashion that nobody likes each other, everybody is dark and moody, and there's all these rivalries. And to be frank, I get enough of that in real life. I don't really need to, you know, spend $5 on a comic book and get that in a comic book. That's not interesting to me as a reader. I want to read, I want to escape. I want to have a world where people have superpowers and get along,
right,
to some degree, you know. I mean, the Hawkman-Green Arrow dichotomy was always sort of fascinating, but it was never a feeling where they were, like, really mad at each other. It was more like a sort of political difference of opinion that was sort of played out and was an undertone rather than the focus of these stories. And now you have Batman and Superman hating each other.
Yeah.
And you know, have this. And I just don't find that interesting. You know, it's not interesting to me. But I like the characterization of DC stuff, you know, more. It's more character driven. It's more like, you know what so-and-so is going to do because you know who they are, and things happen because of who they are. And I just like that. It appeals to my sensibility. But I don't know if that's necessarily a gay sensibility. I don't really know. I wish I had an answer, because it's fascinating to me how many gay men love or have loved comic books.
Oh, yeah. What would the Will Clark superpower be?
Well, I don't think I can say exactly on a family show. But,
family gay show, my friend.
Woohoo! No, it would be kind of fun to fly.
Yeah.
You know, like, it would be great, you know, and I wouldn't have to take the subway, and you could get to see stuff and get the air and go places, and you get to wear a cape.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and who doesn't want to wear a cape with their ensemble?
I feel like I flew with a cape at the Palladium back in the day, but I guess that was different.
Yeah, I don't think that you were actually flying in the sense that I'm talking about.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. Okay. That's my bad. That's my bad. Now, you had a shout-out on your website to just one of the greatest adult film stars ever, I assume. You have a whole clip of FDR there on your site.
He's an adult star?
Oh, I don't know. I just made an assumption. Why are we giving shout-outs to Roosevelt?
Because I thought that the clip was really great. It was – I don't do a lot of politics on my blog because I think it's really done to death everywhere else, and I really can't say anything that's new. And I'm also the kind of guy that's like, I vote. I'm very clear about my politics. I'm very clear, that everybody else has their opinion. I'm probably not going to change anybody, and they're not going to probably change me. So I tend to stay away from it on the blog for that reason. It's just, I don't want to be like sarcastic and nasty.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a few posts lately that have, because it's election season, so you kind of have to do that. But it's kind of a rare thing for me. So I try to do a mix of like some porn and some politics, some pop culture, and bingo stuff and New York nightlife. So I kind of try to bounce around between those different subjects, if you will.
Oh my gosh, the vaudeville act that you and I could do called Porn and Politics. I'm already writing it in my head.
You are. How fantastic. Look, Joe My God and after Elton and Tower Road, they're all like all about the politics and everything. And you have to have this head of steam to really power that kind of overwhelming, propulsion to feed the beast.
Right.
The beast. You got to do it every day, and you've got to do 10 posts a day, and you've got to retain your anger.
Yeah.
And after a while, I'm just tired, and
right,
I just don't want to like be that angry. So, kudos to those guys. That's really fantastic. And I don't feel like I'm sarcastic or rich enough to be Perez Hilton. I just do what I do, and I get a little traffic, and that's fine for me.
So, that works.
Yeah, but I love the FDR clip because it really is like he's talking to Obama. It's really interesting, and he kind of laughs in a way, and he's really concise and to the point without being nasty. He's just sort of like, can you believe this?
Right.
Like, can you believe people are thinking this way? And I find that refreshing and interesting, and I kind of wish that Mr. Obama would do that on Tuesday at the debate. It's all a crapshoot at this point. I think it feels like it's sort of running half and half, and it doesn't shock me that he's got half the people voting for him. It shocks me is that Romney has half the people voting for him,
right,
given his politics and his racism and the homophobia and the anti-women stuff and the abortions. I mean, like, it's just down the line, it is so regressive, and it shocks me that there's a significant amount of Americans who not only agree with those, just sort of think those politics are okay, but like are really pumped for them and really excited about them. That scares me.
Think that is really the direction that we need to go as a country, which is just remarkable.
Yeah, it's really kind of shocking the level of isms that are really embedded into this election, and it's so extreme, Nothing shocks me anymore. Like, people are outraged on a daily basis on Facebook, and I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm just not even shocked anymore.
Yeah.
I'm if you said something pleasant, that's what would shock me.
Right.
Rational and like right thinking. You know, I'm not even talking progressive, just sort of like right thinking. So, you know, it scares me that there's people that support, you know, Akin about the rape stuff. It scares me that there's people who think that Paul Ryan has got it all together. But there's also people who think that Michelle Bachmann is like
the bee's knees.
I don't even know what to do with that. You know, I can't. I'm so shocked. I can't even make fun of it because it's so horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. And thus we must look for alternatives. Because I have to say, one of the things that I count on you for is that you do have a dose of trashy TV in your repertoire. What are you watching these days?
Oh my God, my trashy TV is like Sunday is my day. Because you start out with Once Upon a Time, which has just gotten better with time.
Okay.
It's quite fun if you haven't seen it. It's you know, it's very straight. You know, there's nothing really gay on the shows that I watch. I have to say, just as a side note, I've tried Partners, horrible.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
New Normal. Oh my God, I tried the New Normal. It's better than Partners, but that's faint praise, quite frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just bad. And I think the guys are cute and whatever, but I just feel it's bad. But the shows that I'm kind of loving right now are The Once Upon a Time. It's really interesting and complex, and it constantly surprises me. And even at moments when I don't think I can be surprised anymore, it surprises me. I'm pretty savvy, but, you know, so to surprise me is pretty good. Revenge, I love, love, love.
Really?
Love,
I stopped. I was doing it for a little bit, and then I did it for like 8 or 9 episodes last year, and then, I don't know, I just got over it somehow.
Yeah, it helped that I had about 15 episodes banked on my DVR, and I was sick 1 week last spring, and I just sort of power watched it, and I loved it from the first episode, but I really started getting into it, and I just was devouring them. I think I have to say that watching them now one a week,
mm-hmm.
like normal people do, I'm losing some steam on it. So I think it's maybe one of those series that will be better upon, you know, the DVD thing where you can kind of like just pop them in and pop them out.
And then what happens to Will Clark in the 10 o'clock hour on Sunday nights?
Well, I have to admit, I have been watching 666 Park Avenue, but I'm not wild about it.
Okay.
Especially for a New Yorker, because they're supposed to be on Park Avenue, and like right outside the office that Terry O'Quinn's character works in, that's in the building, you can see the Hudson River.
Well, that's like, just geographically insane.
That's like actually, I mean, if you were like a 50-story building, maybe, but it's the Drake. It's supposed to be like a few stories.
Right.
All, and I, you know, outside of New York, nobody will care or notice or, you know, notice anything. But, you know, as a New Yorker, that kind of stuff kind of bothers me. But the show itself is kind of weird, and it doesn't really have any direction. And I'm now kind of hate watching it. I hate watched Smash last year.
Yeah, I didn't last long on that one either.
No, I watched the whole run.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. The joy, there's enjoyable watching, and then there's hate watching.
Wow.
Hate watching Smash, and now I'm going to hate watch 666. Hate watching, as you know, is like watching it specifically for the reason to bitch about it. I don't have a lot of those shows, but that's one, I think 666 is going to be a hate watch show this year.
I have one of those. I have one show that I hate watch. It's Private Practice.
Oh no, really?
I Private Practice.
So here's the stage. As you know, my mom passed away about a month ago.
Yes.
And she, you know, and like I've been in that place that you are when a parent dies, you know, and especially we were estranged, so, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then I'm at a friend's house like a week later, and I'm, you know, like the TV's on, and we're like, what do we want to watch? Oh, let's watch Private Practice. And the episode was about a funeral. And I'm like, oh, this is really not, this was a bad, bad
show. They all are. You could have turned on any episode, and that would have been the plot.
Yeah. So it was just kind of ironic. But pretty people, though, on Private Practice.
Yes. Oh, no, they're very, there's not a doctor in this land that dresses like these women do, but it's very enjoyable. And then I have to say, I depart with you on the network TV at 10 p.m. on Sunday nights. I'll say it. I'll call it out. I totally drift up to Bravo and to find out what my Real Housewives of New Jersey are doing.
Oh, my God. I don't know if we can be friends
anymore. I know. It's my homeland. They represent my people. I need to know. You know, I need to retain that connection to the Garden State, and they really helped me with that.
I think there should be a Real Housewives of Vermont.
Okay.
Burlington.
She stole my Birkenstocks. Well, you took her syrup. That's about the run of the Real Housewives of Vermont.
Yeah, well, you know, I like the Real Housewives of Brattleboro.
Oh, yes.
It's got a nice tumble off the thing. I mean, you get the five housewives, and there wouldn't be anybody else left.
But, exactly. It would just be me and my cat. It would just be some sort of webcam, and that's the Real Housewives of Brattleboro. I'm just kind of hanging out with my cat. So, yeah.
Love it. That's a show waiting to be made.
Listen, if anyone's listening and wants to produce, I'm open to this concept. I got to work on my politics and porn vaudeville show, but after that, I'm free and clear, folks. I am free and clear. Well, where, Will Clark, do people go to keep tabs on you? How can we know what is going on in the Will Clark world?
Oh, my God. Well, you can go to my blog, which is willclarkworld.com, and I update it sporadically, but, you know, fairly consistently. I also have the Facebook thing at Will Clark. And I'm way over my friend limit, my quote unquote air quotey friend limit. But I have 2,000 subscribers, whatever that means. I don't really quite understand the difference between subscribers and friends, but whatever. So apparently, you can like have a million subscribers.
Oh yeah, it means that your statuses will pop up on their screen. Also, not a euphemism.
I don't really know what the difference is then between having them as friends and having them as subscribers, but you know. I'm a little bit of a Luddite. I just do what they tell me, and I just, you know, write stuff down.
Well, I have to say, I got so excited for you because you wrote me earlier today to maybe delay taping for a half an hour because you had to go meet with a wedding planner, and I didn't read it that carefully and was very excited for you.
Well, I wish that had gone better, but I've been working for a wedding planner who specializes in same-sex weddings. I've been working for about a year. And I have, through her, officiated at about 8 weddings, and I have planned most of those same weddings, and in addition, about 3 others. I've done about 12 weddings in the last year, and most of them officiated and planned in one way or another. And it's really great. My contract's coming due, so I had this meeting with her, and she was like, I'm not going to renew your contract because you can't read my mind.
Oh. Well, there you go.
And it was like, God. And there I'm sitting at a diner in Midtown going, what the hell are you talking about? But, you know, the reason I asked myself, what the hell is she talking about? Because, you know why? Because I can't read mine.
There you go. And she would like you to have that skill. Well, it's something to work on, Will.
Maybe that's my superpower.
Apparently that's what you need. Stop flying everywhere and start reading some minds and you'll be fine.
I could be Saturn Girl from the Legion and you know, read people's minds.
I think you now have your outfit for next year's Folsom East.
It's a very beautiful pink outfit. At least the Mike Grell era from the 70s is pretty awesome.
I'm looking forward to those pictures and to those for those 2,000 subscribers. They're going to love it. They're going to
well,
love
I
it.
I like the pictures I do post up there.
But I got excited. I thought this was your wedding that we were planning, and we were going to just rehearse the whole thing on this week's episode. But it turns out, no, you're planning other people's.
No, unfortunately, first of all, I really love being a wedding planner. It's something I never thought I'd be doing, and I really, really, really love it. And I love officiating at weddings. It's such a joy, and, you know, I'm looking forward to doing more of that on my own and with other companies. And as far as me having a wedding, well, Ken, I am as far away from getting married as you actually can be. I am literally not even dating anybody.
Okay.
That, I mean, you can't get much further away than that.
Do you want to use This Show Is So Gay as a platform? You know, maybe it's an alternative to the OK Cupids of the world. Is there something you want to put out there that would really help you move this along?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, yes, but I don't have anything. I have nothing prepared. I am an open book. There's a Wikipedia page. There's a blog. Oh, don't read the Wikipedia page. It's by some crazy ex-boyfriend who, like, whatever. But I have the blog. My life's an open book. You know, I'm a good guy, and you will have great sex.
There you go.
Fill your with endless chatter. So if that's a plus, call me.
WillClarkWorld.com, folks.
Operators are standing by now.
Well, I must say, this was our third date, and I think it went pretty well.
I know. I usually don't get to the third date. I love that.
It's usually where the wheels come off the tricycle.
Actually, I want to just correct that because I don't want to, I do the self-deprecating humor. I don't want people to think that I actually think that. No, I've actually had lots of dates. Some of them are great and some of them are not. You know, it's just about chemistry and, you know, you can't really, you can't force that just because you're lonely. So,
right.
Actually, I had this conversation with a 25-year-old a few weeks ago when I was in D.C. For doing an event, and the 25-year-old was like very hot into me, and he was very cute, and I just thought he was just, you know, charming and wonderful. But, you know, he's sort of throwing himself at me and at other people, and I'm like, you know, you're worth more than that.
Right.
You are, aim higher. You are young. Don't just take the first guy that walks through the door. Take the one that, you know, go with the one that treats you like gold.
Yeah.
That you're so happy to roll over in the morning and go like, oh my God, I'm in bed with you. That's fantastic. And that's the kind of, I think that's how everybody should be.
Yeah.
Like you should go and go, you know, it's the Ross and Rachel. Here, I'm going to bring up my cultural reference.
Go for it.
Everything goes in a few friends. Ross and Rachel, and he, you know, she's trying to do this, you know, they've broken up one other times. And, you know, and he's like, you know, your boyfriend should be this, like, wow, I'm so happy I'm with Rachel. I'm excited I'm about with Rachel. And of course, she's getting all excited that, like, that's what he's thinking. And then he goes, well, you know, and now I'm with so-and-so, whoever his girlfriend of the moment was. And that really has kind of stayed with me because I think it's such a great idea about how you should think about your partner,
yeah.
Gay or straight, male or female. You should be, wow, I can't believe I'm lucky enough to be with this wonderful, wonderful person. And that's how you know, I think, that the person that you're with is the person you should be with.
I see now that I was going wrong and shooting for Ross and Marcel the Monkey. So now I will change my paradigm. I will do a paradigm shift, and let's see what comes of it. Folks, the website is WillClarkWorld.com. You know I adore you, Will Clark.
I adore you too, Ken.
Keep doing what you're doing, and let's get you back on the show soon.
I'll look forward to it, Ken.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Me to be found.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, I feel like we are following one project from its inception to its production, and it is, of course, It Gets Better, the musical. First, we had Jimmy and Liesl. Hi, Jimmy and Liesl.
Hola.
Hello.
First, we had Jimmy and Liesl on to talk about funding, and then we got it funded, and I'm sure other people helped out, too. And then we talked about how it's going to go into production, and now it's really happening there in Iowa. Jimmy Nguyen, Liesl Reinhart, heavily involved with It Gets Better, the musical. Welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you.
We're happy to be back on any show that is so gay.
Look at that. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Well, we have to start with you, Liesl, because you are the writer and the director, and I feel like curtain time is coming up real soon.
Oh, yeah, except there won't actually be a curtain. We're performing at the University of Iowa, and they had a flood a few years ago, and their performing arts center was flooded. So we're performing in true artistic form in an alternative space.
Nice.
Which is going to be a large room with a stage built in the middle of it and some trusses, and it's make it work time, but they're really committed in Iowa to bringing this message to their community, and they wanted it no matter what, theater or not.
Well, let's back up 14 steps, just in case someone is listening for the first time. What are we talking about, Liesl? What is this production all about?
Well, it is a play that is based on the It Gets Better project. So we've converted an online phenomenon into a piece of theater. Everything's being turned into a musical now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we're a part of that, but we're sort of doing it with really good motives, as opposed to just trying to milk some money out of a bad 80s rom-com.
Nice.
We wanted to figure out a way to get a ground message out there for It Gets Better. We think the project has been phenomenal, has reached so many people, and the next question is, how can we make things better right now in communities? So we're taking that question to cities all across the United States with the project, and we figured that stories and music are a great way to change hearts and minds. The Gay Men's Chorus has known that for a long time. So we're bringing the knowledge and experience of the Gay Men's Chorus at speaking and singing to people who are on the bubble and ready to make a change in their lives, and taking that and mixing it up with some of the interesting stories of the It Gets Better project and sort of the spirit of it. And we're going to not only do the play, but we're going to be there for a whole week doing outreach activities.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Now, Jimmy, you are quite the world traveler, many, many cultural experiences under your belt. For someone who is intimately knowledgeable about this It Gets Better, the musical, what are folks going to see here that they're just not going to see in other theater productions?
Well, I think they're going to see a really creative and innovative way to transform what is a series of online videos and portal into theater. Liesl, who I've known for so many years, is a theatrical genius in taking non-traditional material and bringing it to life. I think they're going to see a compelling story with a tight cast of six members. They're going to see lots of great music. We've got some great songs that have been cleared for use in the musical. You're going to see wonderful voices. You're also going to see an element of involving the community in conveying the message that I think Liesl has shaped so well, which is that it takes not just LGBT people helping LGBT youth, but it takes local communities getting involved and taking responsibility. So you're going to see a chorus from each local community where the show is stopping actually participate and be incorporated into the show. Liesl has designed it so that you'll see that, and they will be really integrating a community voice and wonderful music to symbolize the need to get local communities involved. And you'll see some cool choreography, some really funny moments. It's going to be funnier and more fun than I think people think when they hear about It Gets Better and LGBT bullying and preventing, you know, LGBT youth suicide. It's going to be fun. It's going to be moving. It's going to be inspirational. You'll come, you'll laugh, you'll cry, and you'll really start thinking about how we can all help LGBT youth.
Awesome. Now, Jimmy, as our resident lawyer for the night, did you have to help getting the rights to some of these songs?
I was involved in the process. We did retain a music clearance professional, because that's a whole very interesting world in getting songs cleared. And I know Liesl had a lot of great joys and headaches throughout the process, because there are dream songs you want to include, and some you get the rights to, some you don't get the rights to. But I was involved in helping with other legal aspects of the production.
What is your dream song that's in the musical right now, Liesl? What's the one that's just going to be the showstopper?
Well, I think there's several that are showstoppers. Yeah, the one that's the dream that I had originally, the one that I saw and I had to have, the song I had to have was an old Dennis Ian song from the 70s called At 17.
I love that one.
Isn't that a great song? And there's a drag queen in the show, and I wanted a drag queen singing At 17. I just thought seeing an adult sing that song, you know, and just all the layers of complexity that must go into the life of somebody who at 17 didn't feel pretty and now does. I just had to have that moment. And it was tricky. We had a difficult time contacting the people who are involved in clearing that song. And I sent out a Facebook message, and I got a response from a presenter we're working with at Penn State who was going to be presenting Janis Ian, and got a hold of her. I think she was in Japan, and she personally emailed me, and we took care of the clearance. It was amazing. I was so glad when that came through.
Oh, that
and
is
it's beautiful. Having seen some rehearsals and practices of the show, that is an amazingly beautiful, touching, and powerful moment.
That is fantastic.
The showstopper is, because we did a technical run-through for a small audience on Tuesday, and just it stopped the show, is the original song that has been written for the project by Jeff Marks and Merv Warren. Jeff is the co-creator of Avenue Q, of course.
Of course.
And Merv Warren is a multi-Grammy-winning composer. I listened to him growing up in Take Six. He was in Take Six and did all their arrangements and has subsequently done incredible work on films and television shows. He worked with Whitney Houston a lot. The two of them wrote an original song for us called You Have More Friends Than You Know, which is outstanding. And
it's... Yeah, it makes you cry.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really does convey that much of the point of this show, which is how do you get a community involved, and it's really to remind LGBT youth that they have more friends than you know all throughout the community. Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about this recently because I wrote a blog post, you know, about some women who have experienced bullying recently. Whitney Knopp, that high school sophomore who, as a prank, kids nominated her for the homecoming court, and Jennifer Livingston, this local TV news anchor in Wisconsin, who responded in this on air to an email from a viewer complaining about her weight.
Oh, I just watched that the other day.
Oh, it's amazing. She was on fire and so eloquent. Both of them, I think, drew a lot of inspiration from the overwhelming community support they got on Facebook and online from emails when people heard about what happened to both of them. And it was the community support that they both said gave them the strength and resilience to stand up and speak out and shine who they are. And I think that song that Liesl just mentioned really conveys that message for LGBT youth, telling them through the community voice, that's what the community choir is going to be singing, that they have more friends than they know. And we're hoping that envelops them in so much love that they feel everyone in the audience knows they're there to support LGBT youth in their local communities.
My hope is that will be available for download sometime soon.
Yeah, we're you know, it's tricky. We're trying to both get the show on its feet and get it ready and also create shareable pieces that are of high quality. You know, with sound, it's tricky.
Yeah.
You know, you want the mix to be just right. And so I'm hoping once we get back from Iowa to get people in the studio and do some good recording. We're going to be definitely putting up a lot on our Facebook page, which I'm going to pimp out. It Gets Better Musical. You can find us. And also our website is itgetsbettertour.org. And we'll be sharing lots of video. We're going to be shooting video all throughout the week. I'll probably shoot some at 6 o'clock in the morning at the airport that the cast will embargo.
Nice.
And then and we'll be letting you know what it's like. We really want to show you sort of the ground operation and introduce you to some of the people we meet. And we also want to collect more It Gets Better videos. So that's part of our project, too, is to try and get as many people as we can to continue to populate the project.
So it's Iowa next week, and then what happens?
Well, we have a break. So Iowa came on board this fall. This was the only availability they had. And then we really start in earnest in the spring. So we're going to come back. We're hoping to announce a date in Los Angeles in January. We're still working on the details of that. We're hoping to bring in some celebritas for that one to help really launch it. And then,
Lethal, did you know that Ken used to be a singing waiter in New
Look
York?
Look at that. I'm such
Perhaps
a draw.
Might be a useful celebritage.
All right, tenor, baritone, where are we, what are we hitting?
What day is it?
Okay. how much did you drink last night, right? Okay. So we're going to be going to Penn State in February. That'll be a fun one, right?
Love it.
And then we go to
February 7th.
Lawrence, Kansas. And we have already heard a rumor that the show is likely to be protested by Fred.
Fred Phelps.
Yeah, and his crew. So that ought to be interesting. And we're going to be heading up to Seattle, and each of these is a week-long engagement. And then we're in the process of booking more. A lot of the performing arts centers are just starting to book now. So hopefully the word gets out, and they want to bring it to their community. We actually had a few cities where I've taken other productions before, and they were really interested, and they got some pushback.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising to me. One presenter told me in Wisconsin, he said, our community's not ready for this yet. Which is surprising, you know, it gets better. It's really not controversial.
Right.
You know, but it is still. And in an election year, a lot of people are really attuned to, unfortunately, the making things political.
Yes.
That aren't inherently political. And if we try and make suicide and bullying political issues, then we're really in trouble. We need to separate these and recognize that these are interpersonal human issues. And we can talk about politics in another place and time. This is not a political show. This is, this is a show about young people. And gosh, if we can't agree about young people being happy and safe, I don't know where we're at.
Right. Am I seeing online right now that our old buddy Sasha Sackett has something to do with the show?
You know Sasha. Sasha's amazing.
Sasha was on This Show Is So Gay, I kid you not, 3 years ago. That's the last time we had Sasha on the show.
Well, he's in the cast.
I saw Sasha at a home concert right before we were going to cast this project. And he got up, and he right in the middle of his set, he just stopped and he said, you know, I saw this It Gets Better video. And it really affected me because it was very much like my life. And then he played a song that he'd written after watching the Sick It's Better video. And I went up to him afterwards and I said, hey, I don't know what's going on in your life right now, but I would sure love it if you would come and audition for this project. And he did. He was amazing. And that song is in the show.
Look at that.
And he's actually written another original song that's terrific. It's called Why Are All the Pretty Boys So Mean? It's amazing. It's a perfect song for this show and for this cast, and I think a lot of people will relate to that one. Straight and gay can all relate to that one.
3 years ago, he hasn't been on this show since then.
You'll have to.
Gay community comes full circle.
Look at that. Look at that. All right.
It comes back to you, Ken.
Yeah, because that's what it is, Jimmy. That's what we've learned with all this. All right, Liesl, give the websites one more time so that we know where to go.
You betcha. It's getsbettertour.org, or on Facebook we are It Gets Better Musical.
Nice. Now, Liesl, can I ask you a question not about the musical?
Sure, but if it's math, I'm going to need to get a pen and paper.
No math. So here's the problem that that I'm having, and I'm hoping that you can help me with it. So sometimes when I'm on Facebook, I see all of these pictures of Jimmy traveling the world with scantily clad men, and it reminds me that I need to both go to the gym and leave Vermont. How do I deal with that?
Well, I don't know. I started a collection to try and buy Jimmy some shirts because apparently he can't afford them.
Yeah, she said I'm a poor Vietnamese boy who can't afford shirts.
I don't know what the answer to that is.
Okay.
I don't know how our friend Jimmy finds time to do everything, but apparently it includes a lot of time at the gym and some sort of bizarre skin softening ritual that I don't fully understand. The man has less hair than a hairless cat. Babies touch him and go, man, that is softer than my bottom.
Liesl's disclosing all of my secrets.
There is something really special about Jimmy.
All right. Well, that, so that's just something I need to work through, I guess. That's it's something to work on. All right. Well, will you guys help me?
Yes, Jimmy. It gets better.
It gets better. Thanks, Jimmy. Way to bring it right back to that. That was very good. Hey, will you guys help me close the show? Your keywords, are so gay, and you'll know exactly when to say them, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you guys get out there, go do some incredible things. Of course, drop us a line and send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Go to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with the show. And of course, go to the Facebook and like us there. Go do incredible things to use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference in this world. And while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be Jimmy and Liesl?
So gay.
So gay.
Perfect.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens and high school girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired. The Valentines I never knew, the Friday night charades of youth was spent on one more beautiful. At 17 I learned the truth. And those of us with ravaged faces, lacking in the social graces, desperately remained at home, inventing lovers on the phone, who called to say come dance with me, obscenities. It isn't all it seems. It's 17. A brown-eyed girl in hand-me-downs, whose name I never could pronounce, said, pity please the ones who serve. They only get what they deserve. Rich relationed hometown queen marries into what she needs with a guarantee of company and haven for the elderly. Remember those who win the game, lose the love they sought to gain in Devonshire's of quality and dubious integrity. The small town eyes will gape at you in dull surprise when payment due exceeds accounts received at 17. Names were never called when choosing.